Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
On July 4, 2017, United States of America turned 241 years old. While it is revered as one of the most powerful nations in the free world, it is also one of the youngest. It promises to all people around the globe that if they come here, their rights, human rights that is, are protected by the United States Constitution. Based on the latter notion, many people claim it to be their country. Europeans, Hispanics, African Americans, and Native Americans alike. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, tonight on Talk Straight, talking about whose America is it? I'd like to invite you to join us. You can call us here directly at 657-383-0944 if you'd like to join in the conversation. For those that are new, we have come back from a brief recess. We had a family illness matter that I had to attend to and still working on it, but things have gotten better. That caused us to have a brief furlough. However, we're back. This is Talk Straight, and again, this is your host, Reverend Dockery. And we're grateful to have our Facebook group and listeners to join us and to follow us. And again, we encourage each of you, wherever you're listening from around the globe, join us. This is a national dialogue that we're endeavoring to share across America, but specifically in targeted cities where we are hoping to bring our lecture. And those cities have in common social, economic dynamics that face people of goodwill who struggle, white, black, and of other groups. And specifically, we've been focusing on minorities and their struggles in the political arena in America as a whole. You can archive our previous shows for more details there. But tonight we're talking about whose America is it? And I believe our conversation will help anyone seeking to understand where their rights and their place is to be able to do that. And that is our hope. Join us, and we will be happy to engage you. We have a guest tonight, and we're trying to get hold to him right now. As soon as we can get him on, we'll have him. We'll bring him in after our monologue. But for now, we're going to begin our monologue and ask you to bear with us there. Again, let me give you the number. That's 657 383 0944. Our guest is Mr. Jerry Gregory. He is a Nashville community activist, and he has worked with our organization here in Nashville, Building Families and Communities, Missions Incorporated, which is the sponsor of this particular talk show. And we're grateful that he has agreed to join us. And again, we're trying to raise him right now, and hopefully we'll have him on shortly. We'll bring him here in the studio, and then we can move forward. Nonetheless, having said all of that, we'll have our regular panelists, Pastor Ricky Wall as well. We expect him to join us tonight as well. Now, to our monologue. Whose America is it? Jeremiah, the 17th chapter, verses 9 and 10 reads in the King James Version, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Verse 10 says, "I, the Lord, search the heart, try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruits of his doings." This monologue, I want to speak from ethnicities that were introduced to the so-called New World or to Americas at some point in history and time. In the interest of helping us to understand who came first to America, and then thusly to understand who has a right to America. So bear with us as we give you this chronology here. The first ethnicity, the Paleo-Indians, or Native Americans as they're commonly called. In his work, A People's History of the United States, the American historian Howard Zinn describes how there was a well-established culture and people in the geographic region commonly known today as the Americas. It's not definitely known by historians or anthropologists how or when the Native Americans first settled in the region and the present-day area called the United States. The main theory, though, among historians and anthropologists, sociologists, suggests that people migrated from Eurasia across the Beringia and the land bridge that connected Siberia to present-day Alaska during the Ice Age. And then it spread southward throughout the Americas, and possibly going as far south as the Antarctic Peninsula. This migration is estimated to have began somewhere as early as 30,000 years ago and continued through about 10,000 years ago, when the land bridge became submerged by the rising sea level caused by the ending of the last glacial period. Now, we're talking about a long time in history now. These early inhabitants, the Paleo-Americans or Indians, called Paleo-Americans, soon diversified, and they broke up into many hundreds of culturally distinct nations and tribes, as we call them today. Now, I think it's fair for us to conclude that the land that we're talking about, it was never lost. Never were the people that inhabited the land. They were here all the time. And I'm grateful that we're able to talk about them again tonight. The second ethnicity that came to America, now we know that the Paleo-Indians or the Native Americans were here first. They date back 30,000 some years ago. There's evidence of that. Now let's talk about the ethnicity of Hispanic Americans. When did they come to America? The term Hispanic broadly refers to the people, nations, and cultures that have a historical link to Spain. It applies to the region once colonized by the Spanish Empire in the Americas, particularly Latin America, as it's called. Spaniards who arrived in South America, the region of the Bahamas, Cuba, Hispaniola, in 1492 with Christopher Columbus, and later in Puerto Rico, they didn't bring women with them on their first expeditions. And these explorers began to mate with what were known as Taino women, who bore mestizo, or mixed children, as a result of mating with these Spaniards. Often when we hear of people who are migrating across the northern border of America in this present day, we call them, refer to them often as illegal aliens, we're speaking of the mixed children of Native Americans and the Spaniards. This is another subgroup that was created. Understandably, this group of people feel as though, hey, the wealth and prosperity that's found in North America, which is connected to our ancestry, why shouldn't we have some of this, right? That's where they are, rightfully so. So this is the introduction of the Hispanic Americans. So now we got the Native Americans. We have a new group of individuals that are mixed with the Spaniards and some of the natives that were here, known as the Hispanic Americans. It was after then that the ethnicity that we refer to as European Americans began to have their growth and development. European settlers came from a variety of social and religious groups, including people that were adventurers, soldiers, farmers, and tradesmen. Variety has always been an American characteristic from colonial times up until the present moment. Settlers traveling to the new continent were of various European origins, including Dutch of the New Netherlands, the Swedes and Finns of New Sweden, the English Quakers of Pennsylvania, the English Puritans of New England, and the English settlers of Jamestown, and what was known as the, quote, worthy poor, unquote, of Georgia. These groups built colonies of distinctive social, religious, and political and economic styles. Over time, those that were non-British colonies were taken over, and most of the inhabitants began to assimilate with traditional British culture, law, customs, and status. The colonies developed legalized systems of slavery that centered around the Atlantic slave trade. Now, this is when we began to see the presence of African Americans. And here we can see where African Americans became a vital part of this so-called New World, or this undiscovered place that was not lost. And we saw that it was not lost because 30,000 years ago, right? And from them, the Spaniards came in 1492, right? And they began to mix with some of those indigenous people and create another subgroup called the Hispanics. Here we see now a new group emerging. Lerone Bennett, the African-American historian, as well as Dr. Franklin, they write about this new group of people called Negroes, or African-Americans, as we refer to them today. This is the fourth ethnicity. Lerone Bennett has an excellent book entitled Before the Mayflower, where he describes prior to 1620, when the first ship came of British or European ships with slaves, there were freed black Africans here. One such African was in the person of Jean-Baptiste Dusable, known as the founder of the area of Chicago. Well, he was a free man before slaves came. Contributions had begun to be made toward American culture and history prior to 1620. But nonetheless, that was a major date. The founding fathers of the United States of America, they seem to have functionally defined manhood for everybody as a requirement of American independence and citizenship. The former end of American Civil War particularly brought opportunities for this new group of individuals who were brought here by force as slaves, specifically the Afro-American subculture, or the Negro as they were aptly called then. There was an opportunity for them to become the next group in America as independent citizens, but it would take time until 1865. You've heard us talk about this in previous shows. The frustration, however, was that there were other mechanisms, legal mechanisms, and other barriers, lack of education, lack of economic wealth and establishment, that prevented them from being as successful and as directly engaged and involved as they perhaps wanted to as human beings in the freedom of this new country we call America. Now, the question again is, whose America is it? Just a brief review. We know now that America wasn't lost. The country, the land was not lost. In fact, it was home to the Paleo Indians. We know that the Hispanics are derivatives of some of the original people, but mixed with some of the earlier European settlers, being the Spaniards. And we also know that not by their own will, but by force, another group of people were brought across the Atlantic Ocean from the continent we called Africa and forced into a new role in this social orientation called America. We want to answer the question tonight, and I have my guest on, Mr. Jerry Gregory, who is a community activist. He worked with us here with Building Families and Communities, as I mentioned earlier, to help identify ways that we can relieve social plight and pressure for individuals. He has a bachelor's degree in communications. I believe it's from Rusk College. Fisk used to play Rusk, and they used to beat us all the time. But nonetheless, we're not going to hold that against Mr. Gregory. He was an athlete himself, played baseball and that sort of thing. So, and we have with us Pastor Ricky Waller, who is our regular panelist, who's going to chime in with us. Let me just first say, Mr. Gregory, how you doing, sir?
I'm well, Reverend Doctor. How are you? And thanks for having me on your show.
Good, good. I'm not going to hold against the fact that Russ used to beat us all the time. I'm not going to hold that against you, okay?
Well, there was many eons ago, so I'll take care of that.
All right. Pastor Walla, how you doing, sir? Mighty fine. Speaking of your phone a little bit, you're a little distant from.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right.
And we got another call on the line. We want to recognize you. Feel free to chime in anytime, caller, 615-1080. Mr. Gregory, you heard our
monologue. Yes, sir.
Where do we go wrong in terms of given the chronology of who came first, what are the circumstances under which they came, and who has a right to call America then?
Well, from my perspective, the original inhabitants had the right to call their home because they were here first. And
okay.
from any kind of, you know, from a humanity standpoint, anytime you want to deal with an individual or anything, it's just like me coming to your household or anyone else's household, and order, I had to deal with you first.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then,
okay.
And you know, and during those times, you know, economic trades and things like that, that's when you set the precedent, the first men, as far as being a citizen, and whether the expectation of want to be a citizen. So those agreements have to come between the individuals originally from here and from the immigrants who try to live or reside here in the new world, as they say.
Okay. So now what you're saying is then, when we hear people say, "Oh, they're illegal aliens," maybe that's a non sequitur, or that argument is really not sound, because none of us really have any rights other than the force we took to either take the land or bring other people and subjugate. Who really has a right to the land itself outside of forcibly saying, "This man, you're going to be a gangster"? You know what I mean? Those are the original gangsters, weren't they? Pastor Wally, help me out. Go ahead, Buzz Greg. Go ahead.
Well, I'm usually going to let Pastor come in. I'll wait to the. Okay. First of all, you know, I don't like the term illegal alien because how can you be illegal where you're the origin of a country, first and foremost? And what people have to understand, this country was only, it only came to New World to the Europeans. It wasn't the New World to the African tribes, to the Native Americans, to the Hispanic, to the Mexicans, because they was already selling here. So there's a lot of misinformation in regards to that. But when the individual want to control that and only look at their race of people as the conquerors or the main forces, then that's where those terminologies come into play.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Pastor Wally, you want to address that briefly? Pastor, you there?
Yes, sir. Yeah, hey, Pastor. I'm tuned in. Yeah. I'm listening to. I'm in class right now. I'm listening because I know you got someone that's going to teach us or going to intercede on behalf of us. So I just want to thank him for setting in. You know. But, I just want to sit back for a minute and absorb.
Okay.
This is very new
for
me. It seems like I should know, but just so happens, I'm not very familiar, so I'm willing to learn. It's like a student. You know how when a student show up, the teacher will appear? Well, I just showed up, man, so I want to be taught a little something. Man. It's pretty neat. I just thank God for you, brother. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Fair enough. So
yes, sir.
I appreciate that, Pastor. Here's the thing. I think there's room for all of us to be humble as we learn more about really what we're doing here. You know what I mean? Because you can put a lot of different people from different experiences, man, even people who are African-American, put them in the room, and they can come from different parts of America, and they'll be at one another's throat because it's all about the fear that this other brother or this other man, a white man or somebody else, may encroach on my space. I might lose something. I may be demeaned or denounced, and hence the frustration. And when you really think about the activity on the streets, I saw in the news where Chicago had a lot of some more homicides. We had them right here in Nashville. You really, when you think about it and how, Mr. Gregory, insecure people are, This kind of factors in, but we're speaking about America as a whole, some of the tensions that we see. You know, black folks say, yeah, them things are coming. They taking our food stamps. They taking our housing. They getting all the stuff we supposed to get. Well, there's an argument that can be made. Since 1960-something, we should have gotten better by now. Shouldn't we have matured and been more economically independent and stable? What do you think about that, Mr. Rick? Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, in a sense, to answer your question, I think we should have been better. We should be in a better situation than we are now because, like you point out, during the 60s and even before that time, like in the 20s when you had Black Wall Street, and you had Rosewood, and you had Greenwood.
Right.
So we were thriving.
Right.
Well, we were thriving the affluent African American community, but that when racism and institutionalized laws and Jim Crow played a part of that on our downfall. But collectively, it seems like every time we gain momentum, the forces B will come up with new strategies and ways to demean us and make it part of us collectively to move forward. And they knew this.
Okay. You and I have talked a lot about that. I'm gonna push back on you. I'm gonna be your devil's advocate tonight. Okay. So, but you come on back.
All right. Go ahead.
You give it back to me. 1080, where you at, man? You feel me on that? I'm gonna have to push back on that, son. Come on.
I'm sitting back, I'm listening, but I kind of see where the problem is going. I feel like they're conditioning us to be like that. And like day one as kids, they conditioning us with the education system. I feel like at the age of conception when those kids are very small, that's when you get your most to learn the most out here. And they kind of put us in an environment to be still and take orders. They condition us for the world, the new world we're about to enter as kids. That's what school is about.
Wow.
School was never education to teach you about what to do as a survivor, how to survive in life. It's all about conditioning you to be a great listener, to take orders, to get ready for law, and get ready for punishment. They kind of got us right where they want us. So we can't grow past that until we change the way education has been poured into us. Man, I have no idea who we are. We're looking for our culture through TV and other people around us. That's all we know, because that's all we've been taught. And that's blind people. That's blind, so we can't go no further because nobody knows better.
Great point. You know, I'll tell you what, Brother Charles, when I was teaching high school, I often asked, and I was doing this intentionally to challenge young guys. They were from the housing project. My challenge to them was to think, and I would ask them, Mr. Gregory, if someone grabbed you right now, tied your hands behind you and tied you by the feet, blindfold you, and took you in an airplane, flew you across the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean and dropped you off in a rice patch in Okinawa, Japan somewhere, how long would you survive? And Charles, the thought is very similar to, I believe, the experience of the African-American right now. Our ancestors were brought here against their will, by force, left in a strange land, forced to take on a new language, a new culture, a new way of life. How well have we survived? Have we survived enough to say we actually have some sort of rights or some sort of place in America, or are we still a decadent people that should be removed? Mr. Greg, you want to speak to that?
Yes, I speak to that. From my perspective, we're in survival mode, and it always has been for the simple fact that, you know, our laws had always been put against us, and we had been conditioned to go against each other regardless of the situation, and it seemed like whenever we seem to make a breakthrough. You know, laws will be changed, whether it's gerrymandering, where it's inequality in housing, as far as applying for loans, anything in that regard. But a lot of our problems, too, to piggyback off the reference, the question before there, is self-identification. We had to understand we don't know who we are as a race of people. We let other entities define who we are instead of research who we are from the beginning. And that's the number one, but that's the first problem from my perspective, because we have been conditioned to be looking at ourselves as slaves, where we're much more than that, because we the start of civilization, and collectively we don't understand that.
Interesting.
Okay. I think once you can go back to that, focus on the pre-slavery a little bit more than the slavery, than what led up to the slavery. Now I think we kind of get some momentum going in that direction to understand who we are and what we have accomplished.
Sure. That's a great point. And this is why, in my monologue, we laid out the chronology of events. And you notice that it was African Americans came last. We were the last to come, but yet we seem to be the most challenged group or subgroup of people. The number is 657-383-0944. We want to hear from you. Give us a call tonight. We still got about another hour here. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. Mr. Jerry Gregory is our guest. He is a Nashville community activist. Has worked for the last 10 years or better in the Nashville area. He's a graduate of Rust College with a degree in communication. And he and I have talked quite a bit about a lot of these things, as Pastor Waller and I have done as well. Let's do this, gentlemen. When we come back, Mr. Gregory, I have a question for you and our listening audience, and I want you all to be totally honest and selfish with me about it. And I'll ask that question when we come back. I'll pose the question when we come back after this brief message. Y'all give us a couple of minutes and we'll be right back.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up being a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
To Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, and we're talking about whose America is it? Since we've been here now over 400 years, we've had a lot of tears, and Pookie is still, as Mr. Gregory alluded to early, just trying to survive. We teach him, we tell him in school, you should get an education so you can live the American dream, but all Pookie knows how to do is survive. Mr. Gregory.
Yes, sir.
Given all the turbulent experiences that minorities, particularly African Americans, have gone through in America's history, should members of the majority party, or some might argue the white people, be held responsible in 2017 for what has happened to them in the past?
Well, in my opinion, to a certain degree, yes, because they're partly the one who created this this atrocity toward African Americans and African American descendants, because for the simple fact that our ancestors did not choose to come over here.
Okay.
And
okay, that's true.
And for the simple fact that you go to another continent and forcibly bring someone over here against their will. And to control them and to make them what you think they should be, you're accountable for that. And that's just like me going to someone else's house and controlling them and making them what I think they should be, and that's wrong.
Until the individual
admitted that they're wrongdoing, it was wrong for them to do that, and they only had capital gain and riches to do that and to keep another group down and not allow them to prosper, yeah, you're responsible for that as well.
Interesting. Okay, now, wait a minute now. I'm gonna step outside a formal registry here now and speak a little street lingo. So should Pookie walk up to some wealthy white person
and say to them, you are the cause of my problem, give me your money. Does that justify pooping?
No. Are you referring that question to me or the Reverend?
Well, yeah, I did pose it to you, but I think 1080, Brother Charles wanted to chime in. Charles, you had something you wanted to say right quickly?
You talking about the initial act of him doing that?
Yeah, I'm asking, does that justify? But given what Mr. Gregory said, that yes, he's right.
You know,
historically.
Yes, if you know his history, yeah.
Huh?
If you know his history, yeah, but just to act on just not knowing that, if you know where you come from and all that, you still act according to that, then he identified the problem.
So, but is he justified in some young white boy his age that may not be aware of all of that history himself or may not be responsible directly for what happened to his ancestors? Do you hold that against them, all of them? I understand what you're saying, that the colonists who colonized and the slavers and so forth and so on, and you're right, government has been used, unfortunately, in a very detrimental way historically. But in 2017, what I'm trying to get at, brother, is how do we teach our young people today how to approach and deal with this in a way that they're not being destructive to themselves or anyone else? It is true we cannot erase that history, and that's why we gave the chronology in our monologue. The truth of the matter is African Americans were the last people to come prior to the Asians, right? But we were the last to really have a major presence here. And in reality, you're right. There have been some things that happened. When do we get past that, and when do we use, as I've heard you say before, Charles, when we use our common senses and our better judgment to even overcome those things? Do y'all understand where I'm trying to go? Pastor Wallace, y'all hear that, man? All right. What do we tell Pookie? I mean, of course, you know, I think I got some answers, but just for the sake of dialogue, and the number is 657-383-0944. If you got a better idea for us, call us here, listening audience. I don't care where you got. I noticed, Charles, that there were people in Russia listening to the show in France. I don't care if you're calling from France or Russia. Call us in. We want to hear from you. If you can speak English, now I can't speak too much Russian or French, so I'm gonna be messed up here. But anyway, you understand what I'm trying to say. Jerry,
to give you some insight on your question, Reuben, Reverend Doctor, is that first of all we have to do some self-assessment and self-evaluation within each individual first, then mm-hmm. embrace the community as a whole. What can we do now to make our situation better as a group of people? First and foremost, we have to take back our community, and we got to hold each other accountable for our actions. Just like we get outraged with the police brutality, as we should. We should be outraged by the degradation of our community, the lack of a connection with our community, and the lack of self-worth within our community. Because African Americans, we spend more money than any other race or group in this country, and yet only about 3% of it goes back into our community. So we have to start from right there. Once we start from right there and embrace our community and expand out, I think, in my perspective, everything else will take care of itself. And that would develop economic development, and we can have our own schools, our own libraries, our own hospitals, and you know, and doctors, et cetera, and banking. So that economic development correlates into voters' power. So once you have that, you can pretty much set the standard and dictate who you want to run your district or your community or whatever the situation might be. And if they don't adhere to what's best for the community, then you vote them out.
I see. You know, so Charles, the idea is not to cut and run to another nation or country, but to learn how to exercise your full right to citizenship. Is that a fair conclusion, Charles?
So basically, wherever you at in life or wherever you at as far as city and state, just kind of what do you do? That's just saying, like how do you operate within the environment that you're already in?
Right. So, see, Charles, watch this. It's a lot of young cats wind up behind bars. And when they come out, they're no better or wiser for the time they spent. So that means they ain't learned nothing, right?
Right.
Whereas in that time that they were taken away from whatever it is that got them there, suppose someone was properly telling them, like Mr. Gregory was saying, about learning about self, about purpose and direction, and coming up with your own plan. You know, you can be physically bound, but that don't mean your mind got to be locked down.
You know what? I think that would be more effective if it was done like in film. There's something about seeing that and hearing at the same time would make comprehend. But I know there's a lot of people do a lot of talking, but you don't know the comprehension level of the next person. So I feel like in 2017, it'd be like more a movie than just a speech. Sometimes a speech gets boring, but a movie kind of holds your attention so you can see the difference it'll make instead of just visualizing it or relying upon your own knowledge or what's going on. Because a movie, you can go back and play back and grasp it. I feel like it has to be done in a film. Show the difference of where we at and where we're trying to go. Even though it's a movie, it's still a visual and it gives you hope. You have to be able to see this. That's what I'm coming up with. That's
Sure. Okay. Pastor Waller. Pastor, you there? Okay. I don't know if he can hear me. I was going to, if you can hear me, jump right in here, Pastor Waller. I was going to ask him, Mr. Gregory, as a pastor, of course, I have an opinion and I can opine on that as well, but I wanted to ask him. But, Brother Gregory, in your experiences, what role does our religious thought and theology play in this process of redeveloping the heart and mind of young cats like Pookie so that he'll know that you don't just have to survive, but you can actually live?
Right. Coming from a biblical or religious perspective, you can't come at Pookie right off the back or anyone in that situation right off the back with religious or biblical because his mindset might not be on that level. In order to get to an individual, you got to build a rapport with them. You got to build a relationship with them and understand who they are and where they're trying to go and get to know the individual. And then once you get to know them and let them share some of their insights and what their belief is, and you can go from there. You just can't come to an individual and saying God this and God that. Yeah, that might work for that person who's doing that, who experienced that. But for an individual who doesn't have knowledge of that, you know, and maybe in their mind there is no God, you know, because if there's a God, why am I struggling the way I am? Why I'm struggling the way I am, and why my people are struggling the way that we are struggling? If there's a God, with the condition that what's been brought against us, they continue going against us. So you had to look at it from that perspective first.
Okay. I want to put a pin right there. You raised an interesting point, and that is, and you tell me if I'm wrong about this, Charles, because I think you're closer to particularly this generation that is really challenged now, that being the millennial group. Mr. Gregory alluded to the fact that perhaps some people are agnostic or they doubt or don't even know anything about God. So to bring that to them, you went over their head, and that's irrelevant. Is that correct, Charles?
I mean, that's a safe approach. I mean, it's a safe because you don't want to lose the person. You're trying to reach the person, so I agree to that.
Okay. And so go ahead.
And I believe they believe in God. You just got to tell them the situation we're in. It's two different things going on. If there is God and it's a situation that we're in, don't get them confused by what you're looking at, as if that's God's doing. You know what I'm saying? That's two different things. If you look going on in the world, you're asking all these questions, then you can get confused on who God is. Because I believe God instills a lot of different things in the people not using their tools.
Right. I was sharing with
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Let me finish your thought.
That's the only time he might get that young Pookie to sit down one time in that sermon. I mean, you got to use that. You got to use that. That discernment. Who's in the room? You gotta know to speak to that man. It's a reason why you're there. And I don't feel like everybody reach him at that level because we kind of, well, a lot of people just kind of just not get to what's going on in life. We talk about a lot about what's going on in heaven, but we're not talking about what's directly impacting. It's the lack of knowledge. It's the lack of the preacher not talking about what's for real holding you back. The situation that we're going through in real life. The rules, the laws, and why we got here. That's a lot. That's a lot to go on along with the stories of the Bible, too. It's a lot of stuff that happened. You got to tell them that, because then they know what they're up against, and then you know what you're going to fight for and what's worth dying for. And drugs is not worth dying for, but predicting your people and generations to come and making sure you have a culture, that's worth living. So that's definitely worth dying for. Once you understand that, then you understand what your life is about. That's the mission. It's a lot going against you, man. Your thing is, it's kind of like the video games you play. Don't get caught up in it, try to win. Once you figure that out, you know it's going to be obstacles in your way. It's going to try to take you away from your destiny and know that's the fight you're up against, and then you'll be a better person.
Okay, okay. Mr. Gregory, you want to respond to that a little bit?
Well, I agree with the Reverend, you know. I think a lot of individuals, once you get the individual to find their purpose or understand their purpose, and they can go from there, then they can understand about life and then they can understand about God. But if you don't, you can't live life without a purpose because you just be a walking dead. So once you can help the individual to understand that purpose, and I think they'll be more open willingly to make a positive progress in your life and help those who are struggling in life.
Right, right. This is an academic conversation, so I'm going to introduce this thought under that framework. I was engaging some young guys in another city not too long ago, and what they shared with me is when we hear people coming to us telling us to, you know, put our hustle down, selling drugs or whatever they do illegally, and to come to church and just trust God and live a different life, they said, we don't want to hear that. Because what we have observed, and many of these guys haven't even lived 3 decades, they haven't lived to be 30, man, but what they've observed in their life is that is a hoax. It doesn't work. And I wonder if that's because we have to tailor the message approved such that it speaks to, as I think this is what Charles was alluding to, and you as well, Mr. Greg, it really speaks to their real-life experience and the context of what they know is real. Now, what they do know is I can go out there and I can sling a few days, and at the end of the week I'm going to have X amount of dollars in my pocket, right? And I can go to a rim store and drop some 24s on my car. You know, I can look good and... what the songwriter say? When I get in the building, all the hands goes up, and they stay there. I mean, look at the mentality. But these are people who want to live the American dream. Speak in your phone, Pastor.
Yeah, so that's amazing that you said that. I mean, you know, you just touched on that. I think you was elaborating on the things that which Brother Charles just made known of, and I just want to kind of chime in right there, man. You know, being able to preach a word to someone that don't know anything about the Word of God or don't even understand that this word have meaning. And then one day, you know, one enter into the place where the word is going forth, and if the person is speaking the Word of God with power, then that's an opportunity for someone that don't know to receive something. See, a lot of times, you know, from my experience now, I'm only talking about my experience, because I know that I haven't always been a minister of the gospel, but I was that person who was slanging, you know, and was having all the materialistic things and And, you know, and so I can understand, but I want to talk about what changed my direction. It was a man that was speaking the word of God with power. And I have no clue. I don't know anything about it at that time, but I heard enough to take out of there with me, which was only a few words. God is able. Now, the church service been going on maybe 2 or 3 hours. So you know more than those amount of words that was being spoken, but those were the words that captured me. And it gave me a sense of wanting to come back for more, you know. And I thank God for what he made known of, man, because that's what we need more of. The word of God does say, as he just made known of, my people perish for the lack of knowledge, man. For the lack means that we don't have it. So once we gain knowledge, you know, that's the only way I was able to overcome the drug addiction. It's because I got the knowledge. I received the knowledge and how to go about it. So there's a lot of hurting people that would love to receive the knowledge. But we have to stop playing what I call, anyway, most churches are playing church. I mean, I just have to say the truth, because the only thing that's going to free us up is truth, man. You know, and you speak that thing, you can speak the same word, but it has no power versus a sincere person that's speaking from the heart, not people-pleasing, but doing all he can do according to the will of God, man. And somebody just may change their direction. You know, it's amazing, man. I just had to come in right now, you know, and thank God for that man who had the boldness, you know, to not speak it while he was in the church. He came outdoors. He came outside the building and spoke a word. You see, it wasn't nothing but a seed he was planting. He planted a seed.
Right.
And that seed, you know, when you plant on good ground, man, you cannot shake that seed when it's planted on good ground. And when I call good, I call what people are caught up in, those things that you name, what people are doing that bring forth destruction and corruption in our community, those people are called good ground to me. You know, because they're part of what I came from. I came from that. So I know if I'm good ground, if my life changed, then so can they. But who's going to come out of the building and talk to them? And that's what you're doing there, Pastor Doctor. So I want to thank you for bringing forth the message that you always have and you continue to do. And thank you for the callers that's signing in. You know?
Sure.
I'm going to sit back and listen some more, man. I just got excited.
Don't leave me, man.
Well, Reverend, I'd like to chime in off the last comment that the Reverend made in regard
sure,
to
sure,
that.
Sure, go right ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, from my perspective, from my observance from fellowship, you know, at many churches and things like that, in fellowship at many churches, when you have a good source of young men and women attending that service, and to me, the word is not reaching them; it's going over them, and it's not reaching them. And when I mean that is, you got to tailor your service and God's message towards real life experience with these young people during that time and what these young people are going through nowadays. And a lot of pastors and ministers are not doing that.
That's right.
Yeah. They're tailoring their sermons towards the individual with more life experience and more knowledge about the Bible than more so than those who don't. Until you get behind those walls, because we got a lot of, I call them in-house ministers, and that's not going to work in today's time. If you go back from history, if you look at it from a historical point, you didn't have in-house ministries. You have outdoors ministries, what I call them, and you go into the people and serve them. So that's part of the gap between a lot of the service and a young individual, because young individuals want you to come to them instead of vice versa, but they're uncomfortable in that type of environment.
That's right.
Okay. That's true. All right. If you're just tuning in, this is Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We have with us our guest, Mr. Jerry Gregory, community activist in Nashville, Tennessee, Pastor Ricky Waller, who is our esteemed panelist for Talk Straight, and our good friend, Brother Charles, is joining in with us tonight. We still have time. You can give us a call here at 657-383-0944. We got about another 33 minutes here before this episode is over with. We'll talk about Whose America Is It?
and specifically these gentlemen have been making it very clear to me perhaps why it is some people who are most feel as though they're most left out and forgotten don't feel like America belongs to them, like they're at home. You know, you get a man that don't feel comfortable and don't feel at home, I can understand why he's agitated, why he's anxious and on edge. You understand what I'm saying? So that's what we're talking about tonight. So, all right, Brother Gregory, I got to ask you.
Yes, sir.
I got a table in front of me, and on that table is what I need to improve myself. But somebody told me, don't go on that table. Who do I listen to?
Well, you listen to yourself, because if I know I need help, and I figure that out for myself, and the individual saying they're willing to help me, that's where I'm going.
Okay. But somebody's told me not to go to the table. Or
Well, if I haven't discussed my issue with that individual that's not telling me to go, and then that individual doesn't know where I'm at spiritually and mindfully and what my troubles are, and the individual that invited me to the table and I had a discussion with my trouble and trying to grow as an individual, to me, that individual is telling me not to go is non-existent.
Okay. You ain't trying to hear nothing from them, are you?
He's not existent because he doesn't have my best interest. He don't have no interest in me at all. To me, I look at that as a controlling mechanism and trying to hold me down while this other individual has accepted me openly and willing to help me. So to me, that's just an obstacle I just remove out of the way and go to my help.
Okay. And if I might add to what you're saying, I agree with you 100%. The catch is, it depends on whose table that is and whether or not anything on a table belongs to me. So the Bible says, study to show thyself approved, a workman that need not be ashamed, right? One of the first things I want to do, Paul, is find out what's mine and where is it. As soon as I identify mine, I'm going wherever mine is. And ain't no need for nobody to try to tell me not to go there. I'm going to get mine. Now I'm gonna come correct. I'm gonna do my homework to make sure that it's got my name on it. You understand what I'm saying? It's mine. I have a
right
to its possession. Are you with me? Are y'all with me? Now, don't even try to tell me not to go there. I don't want to hear what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, is that out of order, Brother Charles? But Charles, you there?
I'm listening. I'm still fighting one of them. That's a good one.
Okay. All right. So let me go ahead.
Yeah, Pastor. Thank you. That man. You know, I go
speaking to your phone there, Pastor. I can't hear you.
Yeah. Okay. Can you hear me better now?
If I go
to the table and it's something that's harming me on the table, and I faithfully go to that table, and then I'm going to be afraid of going to the table that offers me something that I would say changeable, something that would cause my life to change in a positive direction. And it's all about the challenge. I imagine it can be a challenge, because you said, what if they say that what's on this table don't belong to you? And I have to think about it. I'm like, okay, what's on the table don't belong to me? It's possibly going to be good for me, but what's on the table that I've been partaking of is absolutely no good for me.
I see.
But I'm welcome to all of it.
Okay.
So I don't know. I was a chance taker back then, Pastor. So I believe I was gonna take a chance and get over that, man. I mean, the pain had gotten so severe I'm willing to try anything but what I'm still doing. I mean, I'm just using that for an example.
Okay.
So, you know, I saw change right there. That's what I saw. So I thought,
right.
You know, you can only, you know, you can receive what we have to offer, but the only way you're going to get it is that you got to step up to it. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to put before effort to get it, there's certain things that you have to do. In other words, you have to be bold enough to step over into this kingdom because there's a lot of good things over here. You just don't know until you get over here, though. So, you know,
right.
That happens.
So I got
that happened,
man. I got a call on the line. 404.
Go ahead.
404-4727. Good evening. You're on Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. Welcome to Talk Straight. You have a question coming?
Oh, I'm coming in late, man, so I got to play catch up. But how y'all doing?
Oh, you straight, big brother. You straight. Don't worry about it. We're great. We're great. Thanks for joining us. We are talking about whose America is it. And if I could just give a brief summary of what we've been discussing, we've been discussing the fact that there have been at least four major ethnic groups in the land we call the United States of America, beginning with the Paleo-Indians, who were the indigenous people, and then the Hispanics, who were children of mixed Spaniards who came over here as colonists, and the indigenous people that were here. Then the Europeans who came to start this country as a economic venture and brought people of Afro descent over here and used them to help them make their money. But today what we're talking about is how we have a situation where there are people who are displaced. They don't feel comfortable, don't feel like this is their home. They got a right to all the rights and privileges of American citizenship. We're trying to understand and identify where that right is and how do we get them to understand you don't have to snatch and grab, kill and steal, but you got a right to all that America has to offer. So that's is that a fair assessment, Mr. Gregory? Mr. Gregory is our guest.
Indeed.
He's from Nashville, Tennessee. And he and Brother Charles is joining us, and our esteemed panelist is Pastor Ricky Walker. So I hope that brought you up to where we are, Lady Carmen.
Indeed. Okay. Well, I think it's no question, even just going off of what the way you just laid it, which I think was a good job. We're talking about a nation which is founded on the genocide of Native Americans and funded by the slavery of Africans. So in total,
yes,
if you're going by who has the right to the land, that's the Native Americans. Now, since
okay.
they decimated and destroyed so much of their population, it's going to be really hard for them to ever have that foothold population-wise. So, you know, anybody who is considered a U.S. citizen, as we are now, should have all the rights and privileges of the country. Problem is, this country is based on power, and that's kind of a formation of how it was created, and that physical force was what always won the day, even though they would write flowery words and rhetoric, which I would call all the, you know, the political documents. They never live up to the rhetoric. So, you know, you can have a Declaration of Independence. You can have a, you know, Bill of Rights and all these other things. But if you don't have the ability to make sure that those are enforced, it doesn't matter. We had the right to vote
right.
in the 1860s. Could you exercise that vote in certain states? No. So power is, no matter what, the dynamic in America that really has to be changed. And that means black people have to get more of it. Not only to defend themselves, but also to take other people's market share. And by other people, y'all know who the hell I'm talking about. So, I mean.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question. You are in a 6x6 room with, quote, the other people, or one of the other people, you, an Asian, and let's say a Hispanic. Which one of y'all come out of there on top?
That's interesting. It depends on the individuals. You know what I mean? Particular individuals, anything can happen. The problem becomes
right.
this fight is never in a 6x6. It's two of us against 50 of them, and they'll have a weapon in hand. Like, you know what I mean? You'll be dealing with categories that are always skewed. Now, the thing is, you can't – no, just real quick. The thing is, how do you not focus on the things being skewed and still try to win the game? So if you're playing Monopoly with somebody who stole most of the money before the start, are you going to argue with them about them stealing, knowing they ain't going to give it back, or are you going to try to figure out a way to beat them? So you know what I mean? That, like, that question you asked puts us in that dilemma that we're in now. How do we deal with
Absolutely.
it?
Absolutely. And I did that for a reason, my friend, because the variable
yeah, yeah, yeah.
is variable. They're things that you didn't put in place, you didn't cause, you have little to no control over. But what the key to your success is knowing what you do have control over and how to best use that at the present moment. I can't bring back the hands of time yesterday, right? But what I am in full control of is my mind and my actions moving forward from now. Now, here's the catch. We pointed out over throughout the last hour or so how some people done some bad things, man. They done some things that wasn't right. You understand what I'm saying? And sadly enough, some other folk learned how to use those same strategies to hurt themselves. Right? But the truth of the matter is there is a lesson that has been learned and that can be learned to turn it around for everybody. Now, when I'm in the 6x6 room with those other people, right, do I allow myself, do I spend my time being angry, being frustrated, or do I think about how to move beyond where I am with those all of the folk in that 6x6 so I can have a freedom to roam where I want to? Mr. Gregory, what do you think about that?
Well, I think you had to challenge your energy and thought in a positive way, in a strategic way, because there are going to be some downfalls and pitfalls and challenges. And how you maneuver around those challenges, that would set you apart from your competitor, which is a tough task, but it can be done. So once you had to go in a strategic mindset, knowingly that there's going to be obstacles and challenges. That would enable you to maneuver around that, and once you have your mindset as far as in a strategic role, it'll be beneficial for the individual, particularly African American.
Sure. And you know, I was talking 404. I was talking to a gentleman who, should it matter, he's white, and I consider him to be certainly friendly, if not a friend. And one of the things I said to him, he's heard some of our shows before. He says, you seem to focus a lot on black male. So yes, that's true. And I don't think that other people don't have problems. But what I'm concerned about right now is how to address particularly black males in a way that they can learn not to just survive, Mr. Gregory, but to be human and live, not just in America, but in the world abroad. How do we get a cat that's in a 6x6 room facing his own fear and inadequacy to understand that the nature of fear is ignorance? And when you are learned and you are educated, you can go anywhere and do anything you want, and you ain't got to be afraid to do that. Todd, what do you think about that?
You know, that's a great point, though. You know what I mean, Pastor? And I'm saying all this because of, you know, being able to recognize not knowing. See, when I came to myself and realized what I didn't know, and not, you know, it's like equal. If you start out playing ball and you got the advantage, you know, you got four players that can dominate, you know,
right.
And then you only have one person that could dominate. And, you know, you probably have five on five, okay? And you only have four that can really get out, and then you have four that can't get out. And those other ones are just there because you're supposed to have five men on the floor at all times. So watch this move, though. So if you have the same equal right as any other person, and then you play, let's see the best man win. But when you already have the advantage, and you, this is going on, and it's an intentional thing because I can't stand to lose, so I can't afford to say we're going to have equal share. You know what I'm saying? So just think about this, man. I mean, I've just learned this, man, and so I'm tough coming from behind. I do understand that. It is not easy. But you said yourself, Pastor, this is what you said. You say, I can't change what I basically can't change. But what I can change is what I do today. How do I carry out what I can do today? Okay?
Absolutely.
Even though it's going to be tough.
Absolutely.
without a doubt.
It, right.
But still, right. to make a difference, you got to use what you have. And I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to shut it down. When I looked in the Bible and I actually seen it for myself, man, it bent me over in a feeble position. It says, this is the day that the Lord has made. See, we have bowed down to another man. And the brother said it earlier. You know who I'm talking about. And bowed down as if they made this day. You see what I'm saying? And so when you continue to bow down to the man that you make it seem like he made this day, you know, there's a song that came out and said, will there still be people who call themselves rulers of the world? There's still people who call themselves that, man. You know, and so if we continue to bow down like that, we'll always get what we've always gotten, man.
Right.
You know, and that's why I like that saying and say, oh, what a difference a day makes. When we come to ourselves and recognize that we have to use what we have, because what we have can mean a lot. It can mean a lot, man. It may not be much, but it can mean a lot. It's called togetherness.
Okay.
There's power in togetherness. The Word of God says how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. Is that going on?
Yep.
Is it happening? Is it available? Can it be done? Well, who's going to do it? That's the question.
Like
who's going to do it?
Right. I feel like the whole world will run the same way. If everybody just stopped right now and just took a moment to listen to this show, tomorrow they just got up and did the same job they did yesterday. And that money, the world will run the same way. It'll still operate. Everybody taken care of. Money separates people. And it puts you in different classes to make somebody feel more superior than the next. But if everybody got up and did whatever job they do, I don't care if you cook hamburgers to being a doctor. If you did the same job today without pay, the world will still run.
Man.
Watch this, Charles.
Amazing.
They
want us to all wake up and see that, then it wouldn't be no government. See, that's the whole trick. They want to be in power and control. But the world still runs. Everybody participating in their daily routines they do today, even from the smallest to the biggest. But everybody participating in something, the world will still run the same way. We don't need that.
Interesting.
Watch this, Charles. All this stuff. We just need to wake up and see that we run the world. Each individual is participating in something.
Man.
The world is being ran.
Right. Charles, you make an excellent
point.
If you will.
Same world we exist without the money.
All right, Brother Charles, if you will, let me share this with you. You made an excellent point. And you were talking about American currency, the dollar. If the Department of Treasury decided today that tender note, that paper we got in our wallets and our pockets, some of them got it in our socks, was not worth anything anymore, wasn't worth a dollar bill, a $5 bill, $10, $20, $100, guess what? We'd be lost, man, and we wouldn't have nothing. Watch this. The minute they decide, though, that it now has worth again, then you find yourself again saying, oh, now it's worth something. But what motivates you to work for it? Because in the back of your mind, you're saying that my efforts are worth something, and I believe it's going to bring me what? The reward that comes with whatever denomination is on that, numeration is on that piece of paper. And what I'm suggesting is that we must place ourselves, Charles, in the position you're talking about. It's not so much the carrot that's dangled in front of us, but it's the understanding that our self-worth is what makes a way for it. When all else is gone, I don't care what nobody else think about me, what I think, white man, black man, green man, purple man, right? What matters most is what I think of myself.
Right.
And how I apply myself wherever I am in the world.
Right.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but that was why I hit on the point of power. Power is who decides that money would be worth something. Power is who decides if you don't work, you don't eat. Power is who decides if you don't use our currency, we'll send troops to your nation or bomb you or things like that. So that's why it's always an issue of imbalance of power, because when you talk about power, then you change the whole dynamic. Now it's not convincing somebody not to treat you unjustly is you can defend yourself, right. And they cannot treat you unjustly. It's not their decision anymore. So that's why this is a power issue. Legally, we cannot be abused by the police. Does it still happen?
Uh-huh.
Yes, because we don't have the power to defend ourselves. So that's why that's my main issue to hit on when I talk to black people about what needs to be done. And the individualistic mind state that we fall into right now is probably one of the biggest issues we're dealing with now. Us, the Chinese, and people from India are the three people on this globe who have 1 billion people, meaning if we acted as a group, even if you can't get everybody, but if everybody acted with like minds, like-minded people, and made groups within those like-minded people, we could start to advance. But if we play this Monopoly game where we're already thousands of dollars behind, then we're constantly playing catch-up with people who are not only profiting from us being behind, but also selling us the pain medication, misery, devices, the drinking, the drugs, and, all of the quick escapes, so we don't focus on what we're actually dealing with. So it's deep.
Right. Well, now, Carl, let me share this with you. You make a great point. One of the lessons that we can learn from the Asian community is they're one of the smallest subgroups in America. But do you know that in the Asian community, a dollar does not leave there before it circles itself at least 30 times? Before it circles the Asian.
Well, that's a difficult one, though, because it depends. When you say Asian, you got to separate it. South Asian, Taiwanese, Chinese, Japanese, totally different incomes from each part. Chinese and Japanese, you start talking about some of the South Asian darker. Well, this is important because a lot of people tell me that, and I want to make sure they know.
All right, hold on for a second, Cole. I'm gonna let you finish your thought. But let me be specific about what I'm talking about. You're in Atlanta, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In Atlanta.
So I'm talking about Koreans, South Koreans.
No, okay, hold on. All right, hold on. And when I say Asia, I'm not just talking about Koreans or Japanese or Philippines or Malaysians. I'm speaking of those who identify with a certain economic infrastructure that comes from that region of Asia. See, they don't look at it by the individual group. They look at that by where is the flow of economic strength. And what I'm suggesting is, in your city, I suspect there's a Chinatown, is it not?
Mm-hmm.
And in Chinatown, you're going to find some South Koreans, some North Koreans perhaps, or some Malaysians, or some Japanese. All of them got one thing in common. They know that we got to circle this money within our Chamber of Commerce in order for all of us, our interests to be met collectively. That's what I was speaking to. Let me be quiet and let you finish.
No, I completely understand your point. I was just saying all of these groups act in different ways because these groups are coming from different nations with different wealth cycles. So some of those South Asian countries are typically poor, and their communities typically don't have that kind of, store-to-store whole ethnic background thing going on where they've locked down a particular market in the city. Now, Chinese, Japanese, and South Korean, yes. And the South Korean one is the most tragic because those are people who black men and women died for fighting a war to get them independence and funded taxpayer money, our taxpayer money as well, in order to build up their country. Then they come over here, set up a store, and disrespect you. So, I mean, it's it's interesting.
I would argue that when we set up our own stores and we run that effectively, we won't have to worry about them being disrespected. But, I mean, that's another – hey, that's a – there you go.
Reverend Doctor, that's my argument right there. If we had economic development within our own community, and the trillions of dollars we spend is not going in our community, then it would be self-sufficient and everything would take care of itself. We'd be able to generate that power as a caller, disposed, and then we wouldn't be worried about the police brutality or the disrespect because we are monitoring our own community with our own people.
Right. The longer they fund and stuff on TV, they showing different stuff on TV, and man.
Hey, this is like a tough disease to diagnose from a doctor. Well, tough disease to treat. Easy to diagnose, hard as hell to treat, because you got to talk about getting that wealth accumulation together because, the people who have made it out, they don't want to take any risks, so they don't go back to the community and buy things, and you can't put the burden all on people who made it just the middle class status. They're not going, you know, they're not going to throw away the advantages they got just in the interest of all people if they're not sure other people are even going to ride with them anyway. So that's the difficulty of it. How do we get working class black folks to pool their money together to start to build those things you're talking about?
Sure. And look, caller, let me add to what you're saying. How do we get even those who are not considered to be quote-unquote working class to become entrepreneurs so that they have more control over how much they make, what they do with what they make, and where they live? You understand what I'm saying? And we can work with the working class as well to build a whole culture and community such
Indeed.
That you're not depending on anybody else for your existence.
Yeah,
you're
back to the land again. That's like
well,
back to the land. Raise the rent up. Let's do something to get you out of there.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I appreciate your perspective. This is great conversation. We got about 8 minutes before our show ends. What I want to do is, Mr. Gregory is our guest tonight. Caller, we appreciate you calling from Atlanta, man. You gave us a great perspective and much to think about. I hope you follow the rest of our show and go and listen to some of our previous episodes, because what we find is, and I think you said this before, Brother Charles, what we don't have enough of is healthy dialogue that moves to action among people of the same experience. And let me be clear. I'm talking about Negro, black, and colored men, okay? However you want to call it, African American, whatever you want to call it. That's where we I mean, sociologically, we've been classified at least 5 or 6 different times historically since we've been there. And we still haven't figured out who we are, I mean, collectively speaking. But I'm just saying that's where the breakdown is. Now, having said that, it's okay for you to be – you take a minute to find yourself before you get with your white brother, Hispanic, and anybody else. I need to know – I need to take care of my business first before I come outside to play. I can't come outside to play until I clean up house and complete my chore. Then we can kick it with anybody we want to all over the world. All over the world.
There you go.
I think the principal issue is that's missing in America in terms of identifying rights of citizenship. The founder said, and if it's a lie, they wrote it down. They got it on paper. They said that they hold certain truths to be self-evident, all men. And I asked myself, what qualifies you as a man and as a citizen? And I'm gonna infer from what I read that when one has established himself with the necessary resources and political position as well as knowledge base, that you have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It went on further to say to secure those rights, governments are established among those same men. We have not properly governed ourselves, brethren. So we find ourselves always on somebody else's agenda because collectively we haven't governed ourselves in such a way that we can establish ourselves economically, politically, socially. Just briefly, right quickly, y'all give me your feedback on that. I could be dead wrong. But Mr. Gregory, you go ahead and start.
Reverend Doctor, I agree with you. And from my perspective, I think we as African descendants, we have to be selfish to our own people, meaning that we have to concentrate on ourselves, stop worrying about trying to get Europeans to understand what we're going through and find fault and blame with them, because that's not going to happen. We need to identify ourselves with ourselves, to uplift ourselves, bring economic development in our community, not worry about any other race of people until we get ourselves together. And once we've done that, then we outreach, we branch out to other areas or other ethnicities. But until then, and don't fall for the race baiting game as far as being racist,
right,
but want to uplift and help your own people. We're not going to get anywhere until we do those things. We got to phase everybody out and take ourselves until we get to the point where each and all, collectively, all of it as a whole, is growing and uplifting. Then we branch out to any other place of the world, ethnicity, or whatever you want to call it. It has to start from that perspective.
Okay.
I like that.
All right, 404. Hit back at me, 404.
Yeah, well, much agreement with the brother who just spoke, man. I mean, you know, it's Garveyism to a degree, but it's updated. It's Booker T. It's all of that wrapped into one.
Right,
and the thing is to not go for the banana in the tailpipe of when you start thinking collectively for yourselves for other people to start calling you racist, which is an amazing thing that people who can exclude you from everything, when you decide, okay, we're going to group ours together too, then they call you racist. But reality is we do way too much trying to talk to them or show them that we're doing it, as opposed to, you know, concentrating on actually doing it, dealing with other black people. We got to learn to forgive black people quicker. We got to learn to trust black people more, because we got a real problem with trust in our community, which makes it harder to pull resources together, especially meager resources. It makes it harder to do it if you don't trust each other. You feel like the other one's trying to get over. So, you know, those are difficult things we got to work through culturally. But, you know, this can't be done. And remember, y'all go through, y'all seem to be Christians. Y'all go through the Bible or any other holy book you want to and read about slavery or any group. Ain't nobody broke the chains as quick as we did. We cannot forget what our ancestors did to get us to this very moment, the sacrifices they made, some of the battles they won through political, you know what I mean, strategy and you know, using shame, using power, using every tool that they could to get us to this moment. This little, you know, slave settler colony is not going to last forever. But those people from the 1800s who they call slaves, and we need to correct that. The great HBCUs in this country have given us a better term, which they say the enslaved. Why? Because they were just people in a predicament at that time. They were still people, still trying to outsmart the master, still trying to figure out ways to slow down work, how to sneak in the house, steal a few more potatoes, anything they could, because they were still people. They were still thinking. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, we can't go for the okie doke and remember what they did.
All right. All right, man, you know what, it's starting to get good now. We've got 2 minutes. Let me get my panelists to come in and then get our guests to give us a final word. Pastor Wallace, give me about 30 seconds, man. Walk us out of here, man. I hate to cut us off, but we got about 2 minutes to go now.
Man, I think you're doing so well. I was just enjoying what I'm hearing, you know. I mean, it's amazing, you know, what we're talking about and how it can come to pass. You know, I looked at the scripture, as I said, and hadn't always known it, but, you know, the book of Hebrews 10 and verse 23, it says, let us hold tightly without wavering. You know, the hope we affirm. For God can be trusted to keep his promise. Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good work. And let us not neglect our meeting together, as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now that the day of his return is drawing near. So we might as well go down with it while we got a chance, man. So I thank God for all of you that was speaking, and all that God can do through us, man. God bless you.
All right. Bro Gregory, give me 30 seconds, and we're going to give out a website here and ways you can stay in touch with them. Bro Gregory? Let's
give it 30 seconds. Go ahead, Reverend Doc. You're getting a lot of interference, but go ahead.
Okay. www.bfcinstitute.com is how you can go to our website, learn more about what we're doing in our traveling lecture series. I appreciate all of our callers and our guest, Mr. Jerry Gregory, who is a community activist in the Nashville, Tennessee area, a father, and has been working for some time to improve the quality of life for folks. My good brother from Atlanta, I appreciate his mindset. And Pastor Waller and Charles, thank you as well. This is Talk Strip. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. Join us next Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. as we bring another episode of Talk Straight. We appreciate you, and we will look forward to engage you then.
Good night, y'all. Giving up.
hard to do.